"Let's not walk so fast," he said to me. The whole experience was very strange. I glanced at him and sensed his unease. As soon as she had me in a trance, I suddenly had a flash of being back there at my mother's house, outside, and I just said, "They're coming for me." It frightened me. I don't know what it means. I didn't want to explore it, and she brought me out of the trance right after that. I did my best to assure him that it had probably been just a momentary flash of imagination, though it disturbed me. I thought it best, for the moment, to play it down. I was surprised that this had occurred without any specific instructions by Dr. Claymore for Howard to return to the past, to that night in October at his mother's house. On the way home, we talked of other things, but I did ask one specific question. The program he had been watching was The Night Stalker, a one-hour mystery show. When you went outside, after the program had been on a half hour or so, you would have interrupted a suspenseful plot. Can you remember, when you came in, how close it was to the end? All those kinds of programs work up to the dramatic denouement, so it should be easy to remember how close you were to the end of the hour. "It's a funny thing, Bud," he answered. "The more I've been thinking about it, the more I think there was a different program on when I came back inside. I might have been out there longer than I thought." My feelings at this moment were unusually complex. Howard was not just a recent acquaintance, as were most of the other people I had dealt with in similar UFO cases. He was a good friend, whom my wife and I regarded with real affection, and he was clearly troubled. The incident had happened not years earlier but only 5 months before, within the period of our friendship and his awareness of my interest in the UFO phenomenon. I was the first person he called the morning after, and it was I who suggested he pursue the matter through hypnosis. In some oblique way, I felt responsible for his dilemma. I found myself assuring him that there was probably nothing unusual behind the incident, that he shouldn't worry, and that time would undoubtedly reveal a logical explanation for the strange light and for his feelings of unease. But in my heart, I was afraid for him. The signs were beginning to accumulate. 16 days elapsed before Howard's next session with Drive Glamar. During that time, neither he nor I mentioned the Toms River incident in any way, and we referred to this forthcoming appointment as if it were a dental check-up or something equally routine. I didn't want to alarm him in any way nor to suggest that I regarded it as potentially significant. When I went to his apartment to meet him that Monday morning, we talked avidly about art and photography and women, as if to bury any apprehension either of us might have about the impending hypnotic experience. The taxi ride uptown was a continuation of our conversation, except that art and photography pretty much yielded the floor to an exclusive discussion of women. Sex is always a great attention fastener, and it was clear that neither of us wanted to think about the next hour. Dr. Claymore received us warmly and I began to set up my tape recorder. Just before Howard went into the office, he laughingly said that he thought the whole effort would probably turn out to be a waste of time. "We'll probably find out there was nothing out there but a couple of raccoons." When he stretched out on the couch, Dr. Claymore asked him, as she does routinely, how he felt after the last preliminary hypnosis. He told her that he became quite tense before going to bed that night, so he used the deep breathing mechanism she had taught him to help him relax. "I just put myself on that little indestructible cloud which got rid of the tension, and then I seemed to almost have a vision of being back in New Jersey again, and a very strange feeling again of being outside, and that was it." Dr. Claymore began the hypnotic induction using the image of a movie theater. Howard was told he will be comfortable, relaxed, and safe as he rests in a soft theater seat preparing to watch a film, 95, concerning that night in Toms River at his mother's house. She set the scene. He is in his bedroom, it's late in the evening, and he's watching television. HR, deep, irregular breathing, it's on Channel 2, and it's a series with Darren McGavin, a series called The Night Stalker at 11:30. It's a fantasy, horror, kitsch, horror show, but it doesn't seem to be on at 11:30, It seems to have started later, AC. Is it delayed? HR. Yes. I turned it on, I was tired, and I was watching it. AC. What are you feeling as you're watching it? HR. Irregular deep breathing, tense. Tensely tired. And apprehensive. AC. What's making you feel apprehensive? HR. Long pause, it doesn't feel safe. It's getting later. I feel tension and pain in my back and up to my neck and head. Irregular shallow breathing followed by a long pause. It's really bright. Shields eyes with right hand and appears to be very agitated, incredibly bright. It's done something to me, such a bright light. Getting up. And I take a loaded pistol from a drawer, and look out the window and walk out to the front, and I look outside and it's bright and quiet out there. It's just the moon. Put a sweater on and walk outside. Agitated. Walk to the back of the house and look around. Look at the sky and look at the house and the ground. There's another bright light. AC. Where is it coming from? HR. It's trees, behind the house, agitated. Inaudible words, with a bright light coming out. Covers eyes with right hand. AC. Your eyes will become accustomed to the bright light and they won't feel so sensitive. HR. I drop the pistol. I remember dropping it. And I feel like I can't move. I feel like there's some people there, and they're looking at me. There are people there, agitated, and they're trying to move me. They're trying to move me, and I can't see it. I can't see it, though. That bright light again. It's all around me. I feel like I'm floating. They're like dark black shadows in the light. There's light all around and the shapes are just black, the shapes, the figures. It's cold, too, it's very cold. Shivers and crosses arms over chest. Agitated breathing, and then he arches his back and bends his neck as if in sudden pain. Oh, there's a pain in the back of my neck. Oh, God. It hurts, oh. At this point HR's memory leaves this scene and shifts ahead to his return to the house. HR, I think I'm back inside now. There's a different program on? A different program. AC, what's on now? HR, it's the late show. It's a movie. It's the second, the late movie on two. It's 2 o'clock? It looks like 2 o'clock. And I don't remember coming in. I put the pistol down and clean it, it must have been dirty, and I clean the pistol and put it away. AC. What kind of dirty was it? HR. I don't know, fingerprints on the barrel or something, and it was wet. AC. Had it been fired? HR. No. No. I took the ammunition out. It hadn't been fired and I put the ammunition away separately. I always do that. It hadn't been fired. It hadn't been fired. I lay down to go to sleep, turn the lights off. I'm frightened somehow. I'm frightened. Have a, took a drink of cognac so I could sleep. I took a Valium. I couldn't go to sleep. There's blood on the pillow though, a little bit, a spot of red, a couple of spots of blood on the pillow. Some tiny spots of blood on the sheets when I woke up. I feel stiff and achy when I wake up. Ache in my joints. Agitated breathing. My shoulders hurt. My neck hurts. It still hurts sometimes. Sighs. AC. Is there any blood on your body? Where did the blood stains come from? HR. I don't know. I looked. I thought maybe it was just a pimple or something. They were very small. They were 97. Just tiny spots. Just a few on the pillow and sheets. I couldn't see anything on my body, I didn't, maybe it was a mosquito. There are mosquitoes, sighs, it's cold. Shivers, folds arms over chest. AC, your body temperature is going to go up to normal and you won't feel cold anymore. HR shivers and sighs. AC, your body temperature will rise to normal. HR, after a long pause, it's morning and I'm dressed. Walking around outside the house in the light, and it's late. I slept late. I don't do that too much. By 11 o'clock, I'm tired, really feel tired. And I'm walking around outside the house and the back and the grass. Sighs, I feel really apprehensive and strange, and I go outside, I feel silly and foolish. And I think I called Bud. For some reason, I feel I should call Bud up, and talk to him, or talk to somebody, so I did that. Talked to Bud. And then he suggests I call the police and see if there are any lights or flares, dicks. It's an army base nearby, and I call them and they say no, there were no lights or flares, that night. And I talk to this officer who asked me lots of questions, lots of questions. A long pause ensues. AC, what is your neck feeling like? HR, it hurts, it's stiff, there's a dull pain there. Sighs. I feel strange for a few days. I get in my car and I drive over to the base. There are a lot of back roads and pine forests, and for some reason in the late afternoon I'm driving around over there and just get out of the car at this spot and walk around, and I really don't know why I do that. I just look around, drive to another spot, and look around. It's late afternoon, and sunset, and then drive back home. Long pause. Sighs. Looking for something. Looking for something. Something happening down there I'm looking for. There's something happening down there. I can feel something happening down there. Oh. Loudly, and then in a whisper. Something's happening down there. Long pause. Something in the face. And there's pain in my stomach. AC. HR. AC. HR. AC. HR. AC, HR, 2. Agitation. Long pause, and his recall moves to the earlier events of the night before. They're coming for me again. It's my stomach really hurts, it really hurts. Inaudible words, then HR arches his back, stretching, as if in pain. People are touching me. Why are they touching me? Sighs deeply. Oh, I want to wake up. I want to wake up. All right. Can you just tell me what's happening that makes you want to wake up? I'm on the grass and they're taking me into this black cloud. It's a black cloud, and a bright light comes out of it. It's really just a dream, it's not happening. It's a bad dream. It's a bad dream. It's just a dream. It's so bright, though. It's so bright. Into this black cloud, it's light and these figures are black, and, there's no shape to them, and they're small, just, my body just moves. I didn't want it to move, it just moves. I didn't want it to move, it just moves into this black cloud. It's cold. I'm so cold. So cold, it's really, cold. Let me get you a blanket. Leaves room. It's cold. Shivers, it's cold. Sighs, what are they doing? What is he doing this for? It's bright again, returning. She spreads a cover on him. Here's a lightweight blanket. You'll be much warmer now. Oh, it's cold. There are different lights now and they're all around the room and they're touching me with the lights. I'm floating, it feels like I'm floating, and, they don't say anything. I want to talk to them, but they won't say anything. They won't say anything. It feels very pleasant, it's soft and warm, I feel very good. I feel very good. It feels all right now. Nothing happened. Friendly. I'm coming out of the cloud, I'm walking out of the black cloud, I'm on the grass, again. Back into the house. I feel very tired. Sighs, oh. Loudly, oh. Oh. Breathing eases. It's all right now. Nothing happened. It's all right now. AC, would you like to sleep a little bit? Take a little nap? HR, after a long pause, all my energy, they took all my energy. AC, just take a short, 5-minute nap, and that will energize you. It will bring your energy back, and refresh you. HR breathes deeply, rests. AC, after a long pause, you will feel relaxed and detached from the experience. You will be able to see it well. Your perception will be good. You will feel detached. After all, you are in a theater watching this performance, this movie. Let yourself have a flashback, a movie flashback, to the people. Can you tell me who they were, what they looked like? HR, suddenly, firmly, no. No. No, I can't tell you that. No. Number whispering, no. Small. Black. Small. Bright eyes. Agitated breathing, I'm stronger than they are, though. Whispering, I'm stronger than they are. They have no real will. They're frightened. They're frightened. I frightened them. I can feel it. They feel hollow and empty. They're like shadows. They look like shadows with eyes, long arms. Long paws. Agitated breathing. They don't like sunlight. I feel that. They don't like sunlight. So small. They're small, small. Cold. Cold, too. They're cold. Feel cold. HR, still under a blanket, begins once more to shiver and clasp his arms to his chest. AC, I'm going to touch your right hand with mine and you will feel warm again. AC notes that his hand is actually warm. It's much, much warmer now. Your body temperature is returning to normal. The lights are now coming up in the theater. The film is over. You are feeling very relaxed and very much in control of things. AC continues her calming reassurances and brings HR out of the trance state. Howard sat up, rubbing his eyes. He had been in the hypnotic trance for about an hour and he appeared haggard and worn. There, tape recorder was still operating. There was a long silence and then I spoke. BH, you don't have to get up just yet. HR, I want to sit up. Hand on neck, soothing it. Oh. Phew. It really feels like it was wrenched or something. BH, was there anybody near you when it happened to your neck? Where were they standing in relation to you when it happened? HR, I don't know. I think I was floating somehow, and they were floating around, but I don't remember that. I just remember being touched. But that seemed to happen when I went out of the house. Early in the encounter, BH. BH, the neck? HR, yeah? BH, did you drop the gun at that time? HR, I must have. I don't remember doing that. I felt like I had it with me all the time. And when I went back inside, into the house, I remember looking at it and it was damp and I cleaned it and unloaded the chambers, and it had 6 rounds in it. I always keep the ammunition separate from it, so I separated those 6 rounds, and it hadn't been fired. Phew. Hand on neck again. BH, when you went out driving around the next day, you don't remember anything happening then. HR. Number BH, it wasn't clear weather. HR. I don't think so, no, I don't think that anything happened. BH, because you said they're coming for you again, or whether that was something connected with that other time. HR. I don't remember that. I think that it was just a bad dream, nervous chuckle. Or, something happened. BH, what about the blood? Did your mother see the blood on the pillow? HR. No. It was minuscule. It was just like a couple of spots on the pillow and a couple of spots on the sheets about waist level. BH, you didn't notice any marks on you? HR, no. They were just almost microscopic spots, but they were bright red. BH, do you sleep on your stomach or your side or back or what? HR, usually, I start on my side and do about 3 revolutions, and then end up on my back. BH, yeah? What about the pain in the stomach that you had? HR, that just seems to be muscles that are tight. I don't know, that seems to be up here, indicates area a little above the navel, and I've had that, I thought, since I moved to New York, but it seems to have started back then. I've never had stomach problems. I used to have, when I was being divorced. Incredible tension in the back of my neck and shoulders, but this seems different. That felt like it was muscular and that would relax. A chiropractor could relax that. And Valium would relax that. but this doesn't seem to relax that well. BH, so you still seem to have the pain? HR, not as much, no. But it comes with a feeling of apprehension. I just got it in my stomach again. BH, the stomach thing, does that feel digestive, internal, muscular, or what? HR, it feels muscular. BH, when you remember being touched, HR, oh. I just got tired. Howard looked so devastated at that moment that Dr. Claymar suggested he lie down and rest for a while. She asked if he wanted a cup of tea, and he gratefully accepted. When he lay down, I shifted to Aphrodite's chair close to the couch. Howard turned and looked at me, his expression an unforgettable mixture of shattered disbelief and helplessness. He could not for the moment find any more words. Instead, he reached out and took hold of my hand and held it tightly in his, all the while looking at me with wide, pleading eyes. I will never forget his expression. It was as if he simultaneously needed to touch another human, to feel the solid ground, and to receive some kind of explanation for whatever it was that had happened to him. I have never felt so inadequate. Moments passed in silence. Finally, I told him that it was not important now to treat his experience as anything specific, a dream, a recollection, or a real event. It doesn't matter now what it was. I knew this was not an explanation but an attempt to make something frightening disappear, at least temporarily. Shortly thereafter, Dr. Claymar returned with the tea and Howard began to pour spoonful after spoonful of sugar into his cup. When she pointed out that he was using an extraordinary amount of sugar, he was surprised. He had not been aware of what he had done. The conversation resumed and inevitably more questions were asked. I sought details about the figures. BH, did they have arms, legs? HR, yeah? Long fingers and skinny arms. BH, do you remember being close to them? HR, yeah? They were touching me. Or something was touching me. It was so physical. I could feel so many physical things happening. BH, when they were touching you, where were they touching you? Were you standing up, sitting down? HR, it felt like I was floating. It felt like they were touching me when I was standing up out C9E, in the grass, and moving or floating me. I don't remember my legs walking. I don't remember my limbs moving. I don't remember articulation. Like I was floating into this black cloud. Occasionally, there was a blinding light, a bright light, and I could feel them touching me, all over. I asked about the figures and Howard made an interesting psychological observation. HR. It really felt like they had no will. I somehow felt stronger than they were. Somehow. Like. There was fear from them. Somehow, they were fearful. There was something there, BH, and yet you weren't really able to move. HR, no, essentially. But I didn't seem to want to. I don't remember wanting to get away. BH, and there was a point when you said you felt very good. HR, yeah? Yeah? Very calm and relaxed. BH, do you remember when that was? HR, that seemed to be towards the end. That seemed to be before I went back into the house. But there was no physical shape. I can't really remember any physical enclosure that I was going into because the foliage is really tight. There is not a large expanse there. The biggest expanse of open space for any kind of space to go into would be no more than 30 feet in diameter. BH, we'll have to go out there and take a look. HR, no. There's nothing there. BH, well, I'd just like to take a look. HR, no, I don't think there's anything there. BH, there wouldn't be anything there still, but I'd like to go out, and take a look at the space and get a sense of it. HR, I don't think there's anything, nervous laugh. BH, it fleshes it out for me a little bit just to see the area. HR, well, maybe in the spring when it gets a little warmer, or something. There really is nothing. A half hour later, during lunch, Howard suddenly said that he had no idea why he was so opposed to my visiting the site of his encounter. He said that he, himself, thought it was odd to so strongly oppose it, and he could provide no reason for his behavior. The impact of Howard's revelations were almost as unnerving for me as they were shattering for him. I sensed not only what he had gone through, but what he was about to experience. I phoned him the day after to ask how he was. "I'm feeling okay right now, but I had a terrible night. I really didn't sleep very much." I suggested he call Dr. Claymar if things got to be really bad, because she could ease his anxiety through hypnotic therapy. He said he would call her but only if it seemed absolutely necessary. At any rate, we did not talk about the content of his experience. His immediate peace of mind was the uppermost priority. I called him each day for the next several days, but it took a week or so before things began to return to normal. He told me later that he had suffered from a powerful sense of having done something forbidden, of having betrayed an important injunction not to remember and not to tell what happened to him. I thought immediately of Stephen Kilburn's "I'm Not Supposed to Remember." When Dr. Chemer had asked him why he said he was not to remember, Stephen had answered, "I just know I'm not. It's really serious. I might die. I mean, I know I won't, if I remember, but I'm really, really afraid to see." Howard's repeated refusals to allow me to visit there, site of his encounter, seemed a product of this same kind of deeply implanted threat. One aspect of these abduction accounts must be constantly kept in mind, and that is the dramatic similarity of the basic sequence of events. By comparing these two typical cases, one can construct a step-by-step scenario that suggests on the part of the UFO occupants a thoroughly preconceived modus operandi. The very first element is the establishment of some sort of contact or control. Under hypnosis, Stephen described the drive in Maryland and mentioned that he was tired. Dr. Claymar suggested he stop and rest. "No, I don't want to do that. Don't stop me. Something will happen if I stop." The suggestion is unmistakable that Stephen's mind is somehow being prepared for what is about to happen. Howard, at the beginning of his hypnotic recall, explains how he feels, tense. Tensely tired and apprehensive. Aphrodite asks what's making him feel apprehensive and he answers, "It doesn't feel safe." It is possible, of course, that both of these men were simply afraid to proceed with a full recollection of their encounters, but the evidence of other cases, as we shall see, suggests the more literal interpretation. The next step is an overt seizure of control over the victim. A lighted object flies over Stephen's car, and then, seconds later, his car is somehow pulled off the road. Howard, sitting quietly indoors, sees a strange light fill the room and says, "It's done something to me." Near total control having been established, each man next does exactly what he is supposed to do. Stephen climbs out of his car and stands near the front fender. Howard gets up, puts on his sweater, and goes out to the back of the house. Each man still has a rational, self-protective impulse that he is unable to act upon. Stephen thinks he should go to a nearby house and try to get help, and Howard takes a loaded gun with him when he goes outside. Neither action is realized. Apparently under external control, Stephen does not move away from his car, and Howard drops his weapon. If these events in the scenario can be seen as the initial setting up of the subject, the next step is his literal immobilization and capture. In almost every abduction case I know about, this is the most frightening part of the entire experience. I feel like I can't move. There are some people there and they're looking at me. They're trying to move me. Howard's description of paralysis is vivid. "It felt like I was floating. I don't remember my legs walking. I don't remember my limbs moving. I don't remember articulation." Stephen said, "They're standing there just looking at me. I can't do anything. My hands are still. I can't move. I can't take one little step." They know it, too. This terrifying and absolute loss of body control usually occurs seconds before the captors come into view, thus combining two kinds of trauma into one devastating experience. The next, and obvious event, is the transporting of the captive into the UFO.